Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Bikini in the Brain. Obviously, you know who I'm here with.
It's me.
That's all.
Me.
No name. We're just going to
call her you.
Just that girl.
It's you.
That bikini chick.
That one girl.
So, we are carrying on from our last episode, which was...
We're going through the facts and the myths.
That's right.
To decide if some of these fitness phrases or things that you've heard in the fitness industry are myths or facts, or some of them can even be a little bit of both.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a part two. Since you guys liked it so much, we, you know, we're here for you guys.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into the part two of the fact or myth, bikini and the brain.
And I don't know the questions you're asking ahead of time, so this is
even
fun.
Though I emailed you, it's okay.
Well, I remember at one point I saw like all of them. So we'll see what we get.
It's nothing too crazy, nothing that you can't answer. All right, so let's start off with the first one here. Eating 30 minutes after a workout is the best time frame for making physique improvements. Woo! And I want to say, I believe this is some truth. This is truth. I mean, it's not probably 100% true. It's kind of like one of those things that's like, well, there might be a little bit of an advantage, but might as well take it, especially us athletes. We're trying to get all the gains we can. I know that you kind of tell me to eat after workouts.
Yeah, so. It's just one of those things. Here's the thing. Like, there's sometimes when the science comes out and there's not a study good enough to really say. So the only study that like I'm really that's like a real credible one that I've seen. I know there's probably other ones. There's always studies being done, but one that was done that showed like basically they're saying is when you work out, you deplete your glycogen. Your glycogen stores are low. So why not replenish your glycogen right when they're the most susceptible to being like restored? So the carbs in your muscle, basically the glucose that's in your muscle, why not shuttle them right to the muscle right after it? And why not spike your insulin when you do that so you can also drive amino acids to it too? So like usually post-workout, they'll say, okay, do a high glycemic index carbohydrate source, a sugar source, whatever, that spikes your insulin. And then insulin is basically in your body is like the train that drops nutrients off. Yeah, so you always have some insulin in your body going through and dropping off nutrients. And then if you have like a high glycemic index food, you have a high sugar food that's like that basically it makes your train move faster. If you're dropping nutrients off faster. So people say, okay, let's do a high glycemic index carbohydrate. Let's drink some amino acids, some protein that's easy digested so it's in the bloodstream quick. And that way we can replenish our glucose and our recovery, make our recovery faster because they're in that time frame. Is it absolutely necessary? I don't think it's absolutely necessary, especially if you ate earlier in the day and you ate like, you know, chicken breast or something that's like digesting slowly. And then you have, you know, carbs in that earlier meal too. It doesn't seem like it's super necessary, but what I always say is what if it's just a couple percent better?
Yeah.
And it probably is a couple percent better because... Mm-hmm. The study that you can reference is they did it with cyclists. So they did like endurance-based athletes and they measured like glucose uptake if they did a post-workout right away after a cycle, after doing cardio. And then they did it again and they ate like an hour later, 2 hours later, something like that. So they had two different tests and they did show that there was more glucose uptake right when they worked out. Now that's an endurance-based sport. They're using a lot more glucose than we are in weightlifting, right? So is it super necessary? Probably not, especially if you ate earlier in the day. But the thing is, bodybuilding is all about these like little 1% things, you know?
Yeah.
If it's 1% better, why not do it?
And I got a question for you going back to the cycling thing. Although they are more endurance-based athletes, right? And then you're talking about they go through more of the glycogen, don't we kind of counteract that by maybe having a lower glycemic diet to begin with anyway? Does that make sense? So they're carbing up. I know how endurance athletes are. They're carbing up. They have like freaking carbs for breakfast, carbs for lunch, just all carbs.
Yeah. Well,
so do you think that kind of offsets like perhaps like somewhere in the, like we can kind of get on that same level of depletion based on we're usually lower anyway?
Yeah. You know what? That's a good point. And it's actually a really advanced point. Here's the thing: the more carbs you have, the less carb sensitive you're going to be, right? So I guess it's all relative to
That's a good point.
Because if you're constantly eating carbs, well, then you're not going to get the spike. Like if someone's been doing it for years, they're not going to get the same spike as someone who's not having any carbs and all of a sudden has a huge glycemic index.
So it would benefit somebody like me, because I usually do lower carbs. So that's like something for me. But somebody that's like maybe in their off season, they're just carbs, carby barbies.
Your carb sensitivity is going to be relative to how many carbs you're eating for the most part, right? So to some capacity, to a decent capacity. So like, yeah, if you're always eating carbs, that's a good point, because then the endurance-based athlete wouldn't get as big of a spike, so then technically wouldn't have, So then the bodybuilder, if it was like a low-carb bodybuilder and they did a spike post-workout, then yeah, they'd probably have the, I guess if you were to like look at like the continuum of who's eating carbs and whatnot, they would probably have advantage them. So it'd probably be, yeah, most benefit for someone who hasn't had carbs to have that spike. So yeah, it's probably, you're probably right. That's a good point. So I guess, yeah, it's also relative to your scenario of current diet as well, I think, in terms of glucose uptake and insulin spike and driving nutrients. So yeah, that's a very layered question, you know? So, but yeah, there's probably arguments against it too. But yeah, I think this is what I think in bodybuilding. I think it's like football, you know? Like it's a game of feet and inches, right? Mm-hmm. And this is what bodybuilding is, you know? It's like, yeah, you can listen to the science guy who says, no, it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter. Well, it shouldn't matter doesn't mean it doesn't matter. And it doesn't, and it shouldn't matter doesn't mean that it's not 1% better. And if you do 10 things that are 1% better, well, you're 10% better than the guy who's not doing any of those things.
It's like one of those things that doesn't make or break your workout. It's not like, oh my God, I didn't have a meal within an hour. My workout's ruined. It doesn't even matter. It's not to that extent. But if you keep doing these things over time, like let's say you do it, you know, 25 days out of the month and you have like that post-workout meal, you might see a little bit of a difference. So, you know, why not?
Why not? Why not do it? You know, here, the only time I would say like not to do it would be someone who's like, well, there's a couple scenarios, but one scenario would be like, okay, someone who is off season, who's eating a lot of calories and they're eating so much and they work out at the end of the day and they've had much food. It's like, it's probably not going to matter like
it's
at all.
It's still digesting anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for them, it's like, yeah, throw more nutrients in, but the nutrients are already there. Mm-hmm. And then the other time I would say, this is kind of the more risky time. I would say if someone is like really dieted down and they're like really barely getting any calories in, they're like, let's say it's a bikini athlete that's 100 pounds and she's eating like 1100 calories getting ready for a show, and that post-workout meal is, you know, 300 calories, kind of sucks. So that's a huge part of her day that she's just like drinking, you know. So
or she doesn't have to drink it. I don't think you even referred to it in liquid form.
Well, if we're looking at ultimate like benefit, it would probably be liquid form because
that's
it's faster digesting. Yes, good to know. So yeah. So
because I was like, you just mentioned liquid, and I don't think you mentioned it previously, I'm wrong.
So post-workout has a lot of it, like the timing of it, you have to take into consideration the digestibility of food, too. So like, if you're doing a liquid-based post-workout with like liquid
protein. Like a Gatorade
protein,
or something.
Yeah, the best thing, and that sucks because you're losing carbs there, right?
Yeah,
you're using
carbs. I'm not doing that. Sorry.
You know, I have a lot of people do like, potato and rice, and then I do have some people like, especially in the off-season, I'll be like, have anything that you want that's sweet, and right here, I don't care if it's sugar here and you need that. Mm-hmm. We just need some carbs. And this is the one time of the day where we can, we can do a high glycemic index gummy bear or something, right? Something like, you know, why not?
Now you're talking my language.
You know, we're getting sugar. So, but if you were to really look at, okay, what's the most optimal way of getting nutrients into my muscle cell post-workout and recovery, you would probably do a mixture of amino acids and then spike it with leucine. I like to spike it with leucine because that's one of the major amino acids for recovery and building muscle. So BCAAs already have leucine, but I like to spike mine. You know, for like a lot of bikini athletes, I think like 5 to 8 grams post-workout of that. And then like, you know, 8 grams of amino acid mix of like a 2-1-1 amino acid mix. Mm-hmm. It's a 2-1-1 leucine, valine, isoleucine. Yeah. And then, like a Gatorade, which is like a maltodextrin carb. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's other carbs that are probably better, like HBCD is a better carb, but any sugar carb, any liquid sugar carb is going to be a good thing.
Like maybe what about like a banana and a protein shake or blended together? Would you consider that kind of like a...
Yeah, that would work too. And it's good tasting. It's good too.
See, I'd rather do that.
Yeah. And that's, I do that for a lot of people. Banana, whey protein, blended. Because it does have a higher glycemic index and it actually tastes good. You don't feel like you're wasting food, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the only problem when you're dieting. So if you're... Let's say you're dieting hard and you're like, I just want that meal because I want to eat something. Well, then in that scenario, probably the best thing to do would be to like eat your chicken and rice and then have like a liquid amino acid. So at least you get something in there quickly. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to get the spike because the glycemic index of the rice is really affected by the chicken too.
Right.
So like if you have, let's say you had gummy bears and it's going to spike your glycemic index like we talked about. Now let's say you had gummy bears in covered in peanut butter. Well, now that fat's in the system, it's going to lower the glycemic index of the food.
Oh, interesting.
And if you have, if you have fat with peanut butter and protein, well, now you just got to remember, it's just like about digestion.
Right.
So it's going to digest slower now because there's more food. Therefore, it affects the glycemic. Does it affect the glycemic index of the raw gummy bear? But it affects the digestion process, which doesn't have as big of a glycemic index spike because it's digesting now more stuff at the same time, and other things are being leaked in, and so it lowers the total insulin spike after that.
Oh, awesome!
So there you go. So, yeah. Okay.
Question though, creatine. Do you recommend competitors take that? Are you a believer in creatine?
Yeah.
Is this a little off subject, or do you have them take it after? What's your ideal time to take creatine, or does it not matter for you?
So creatine is not a thing you need to have like pre-workout, post-workout, anything like that.
It's just throughout the day, anytime.
It stores in the muscle, so you can have it at any time.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like people will think, oh, I got to spike it and get it in my system after, and there's a lot of people that like say that. A lot of companies market that too. But insulin,
I think it's also deceiving because it can be in pre-workouts and stuff, so people think that it's where it needs to be.
Yeah.
So.
But your insulin might drive more to cells and stuff, but it's not like it's you spike your insulin and then you take creatine and it's like, oh, it's in the muscle more. It's like it's just you have a lot of creatine in your diet already. If you're eating red meat, you have creatine in your food. It's a natural thing occurring. So I do like creatine. Now I do a lot of labs on people too. So if someone is doing things like, because some of our listeners will be doing things like PEDs or SARMs or something like that, I usually say don't do creatine if you're doing that, because creatine, which is really crazy, sometimes creatine causes people really high creatinine spikes, which is like their liver, where it's like, their kidneys go up. Their values in their kidneys go up from like the creatinine. So I don't know. It's like some people are really, really sensitive to it. So if they're taking some things already, I just say, hey, just avoid the creatine. Don't do as much stress on your body. But that's something that happened with one of the energy drinks had creatine in it, and people were getting like, their kidney values were going up and stuff. So the creatinine levels were raising. So, yeah, so I kind of avoid it for certain scenarios. If someone is, you know, drinking a lot of water and they're natural, I say do creatine. And if they're not, then I say just avoid creatine because you want to keep your body as – you want to avoid – anything that has a low benefit that has any like health, like could cause little issues, and you're already taking some other things that could cause issues, just get away from the stuff that's not doing that much. Because creatine does a little bit, you know, it's not like it's changing the game, you know, it's just like, you know, an extra rep.
An extra rep.
Set, you know, type of thing.
I like that. I like that comparison. So yeah, the next one, eating a diet with a lot of fish will help thin the skin. I still hear this. What the heck? I still hear this. What the heck?
I want to explain
it. No, it doesn't.
Yeah. No, here's the thing. You got to look at evidence, and you got to look, when you look, think about these statements, you got to like just think about it logically. So if you look at like countries and different ethnicities that are like high fish eaters. So you'd look at like Asia, Japan, you know, those countries that are like that.
Asia's a country, but.
I'm sorry. Asia's a continent. All right, right? Continent.
Yeah, sorry. Did I mess it up too?
No.
Asia's a continent. Asia's not a country.
Yes.
See, I tried to correct you, and I made myself look foolish. Asia is a continent.
Yes, so Japan.
Japan is a country.
So Japan, which isn't even a part of Asia. Is it part of Asia?
It's a part of Asia.
It's its own island, so I don't know. We've been there. That was fun. Yes. I should know this. So you look at like places where they eat a lot of fish. Is their skin thinner?
What is wrong with us today?
I don't know, actually. I feel good.
I mean, my brain isn't working.
I feel good. I have my coffee.
No, it's like bikini and the half a brain.
I know. What's going on? Bikini and one shared brain.
Anyway.
In Japan, is their skin thinner? It's hard to say that. Is their skin thinner than any other countries, right, that they don't eat mostly fish? And the answer is no. You know, otherwise, they eat so much fish there that you'd see bones, right? You just see their skin would be so thin. So obviously, that's not the case. So what is it doing? Okay, why do people think that it does that? I understand why. This is what happens. And this is just, there's a lot of bodybuilding myths that need to, like,
that
come
one
to
is,
an end.
Like, I can't believe that one's still around, honestly.
intelligent people think this too. It's crazy. They like don't think it through. So what is happening? Okay, so when you cut your food to cod and tilapia, there's two things that happen. One, if you have, let's say you're having like turkey, ground turkey. So you're having ground turkey, you're having chicken breast, you're having, you know, ground beef, but it's lean. You're having all this lean meat. You're having basically a lot of lean meat you're eating, and then you switch to fish. Okay, well, lean meats, even like ground turkey, has a good amount of fat in it. It has a decent amount of fat. So what happens is you go to a tilapia or cod. There's like no fat in tilapia or cod. So you switch 5 ounces of, you know, ground turkey for 5 ounces of tilapia. Well, you dropped your fat content dramatically. Like there's like no fat in most tilapia. It's like barely any fat. But in ground turkey, you get, you know, what it's like 7 grams in like 5 ounces. So you cut, you know, 6 grams of fat. So 6 grams of fat times 5 meals a day, you know, we're talking 30 grams of fat times 9 calories. So what is that? 180 calories extra? So 180 calories you just cut out of your diet. Yeah, of course you look like your thin is getting, your skin is thinning out, but you're just leaning out, period. So it does that. That's one thing it does. So it's a way for you to cut fat. But you could just do ground chicken breast and have the same effect because there's like no fat in the ground chicken breast or like a very, very lean chicken breast. And you'd have no problem. And then the other thing it does is it's an easy digesting food. So anytime you have like, let's say you're eating like steak before and then you go to like an easy digesting food, yeah, your waistline will usually come down a tiny bit, but not a lot, not significantly. And if you're having ground chicken and then you're having like tilapia, your waistline, I don't think you'll see it at all. It's just like, if you're eating hard to digest foods and you go to easy digest foods, yes, your waistline will come down. If you're having hard to digest foods all the way in, then yeah, you'll probably suffer on your waistline, I don't know, a tiny bit, like a minute amount. So another one of those things that maybe it's 1% better, but it's not thinning out your skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's other ways to do it. Definitely false. Don't put yourself in misery. I know I sure don't.
Yeah.
I don't eat any seafood. It's gross to me, and I will gag and throw up. Nope.
Even in Japan. Even in Japan, I actually didn't eat sushi. We did go to a sushi place.
Even the avocado sushi, which is just the avocado and rice, smelt too much like fish. Yep. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. And everything is like flavored fish over there, too. It's fish flavored pretzels and like it's like even things that you wouldn't think are fish flavored, you open up the back because you can't read what it says, right? You open up, you're like, oh man, it's fish flavored.
Remember that time we were in, I don't know if it was Korea or Japan, and I had these coffees and I was drinking like two of them a day.
Yeah.
They're like these little coffees and I was like, this is great. There's only like two carbs in the whole thing. It tasted really good and I couldn't read the back of the label and I was drinking them like the whole trip. And then Ashley was like looking at it. She's like, I think this is per 100 milliliters. And it was like 3 grams of sugar or something like that. And I was like, each of the thing was like 600 milliliters, the coffee. So I was drinking.
Yeah, they do it differently.
Yeah. So I was drinking like 18 grams of sugar, twice a day. I was like, we don't drink sugar ever, you know? Uh-huh. And I was like, what are you talking about?
So you're like, darn it.
We're like, try to read it. I was like, oh crap, I think this is 18 grams of sugar.
Oh man, don't you just hate that? Yeah. It's like when you just accidentally consume sugar. Like that one time, remember, I tell you, I yelled at my boyfriend. I got the most mad about this than anything I've ever gotten mad about. It's like, I told him to get me a diet root beer, and he got me a regular one, and I didn't look at the label. Because actually, the labels look pretty similar with the root beers. And I like literally downed like 3/4 of a... of a root beer. And this was like when I was really trying to get lean, when I was coming back, I was so frustrated. I'm like, oh my God, I literally just drank so much sugar. Like I could have had a good cheat meal for this.
Yeah.
Like,
it just sucks because the exchange is so
much. It's like I can't even taste the difference. Like I can't.
It's like, what is it? Like 40 grams of sugar, 25 grams of sugar in a can. I think it's like 28 or something like that. Yeah. That's a good amount of like carbs you could have exchanged.
It was
for
2 liter.
Oh man.
2 liter, 3/4.
Oh, you would have had like 50. That's a huge, that's like a, just a huge, so the value, we think about, it's funny, we think about it like money, like, okay, we have this many carbs, I'm not going to waste it on something I can't chew, right? So
right, it could have went to Cheesecake Factory or something with so all funny. That. It's like it amazes me like how regular, normal people drink that kind of stuff without like, I don't know, realizing you can just get diet, I guess.
It was, the funniest one was Tori, it was like one of her first shows, it was like 6 years ago. We're at one of these shows, but she wanted to do another show like 2 weeks later. Like it was like 2 weeks later. And we were like, we went to Red Robin after with like the team. And I was like, okay, you get like a cheat meal, but you have to still stay in range. You're like competing in 2 weeks or whatever. I'm like, so have like, I think I was like, have like 1400 calories and have X amount of like carbs, protein, whatever. And then she was like, so she didn't want to, like, she was trying to figure out like the best way to calculate this within like everyone's meal. She's like, I can have some of that and some of that and some of this. And she was like, she probably put like 20 minutes into effort of like figuring out the best way to like spend her carbs.
That's a real thing. So indecisive whenever I like do that kind of stuff, because I'm like, what should I have? Like, I don't know. But you know what's funny, guys, is I always have Adam taste test my diet drinks for me. Like, if we go to a restaurant and I get a Diet Coke, I make sure, I have him taste it first. Because I can't tell the difference. Yeah. You can. I cannot taste the difference.
We've caught it once or twice.
Yes. Yes. So it just goes to show you, like, I don't know. If I were super close to a show and you can't tell the difference, like, I would be very careful about that kind of stuff. In fact, even, like, if I go to, like, Starbucks, like, when I'm, like, a month out from a show, sometimes I'm like, I'm not even going to risk the sugar-free vanilla because I don't know if it's actually sugar-free. Because sometimes I know how it is. If they get busy or not paying attention, you could easily just pump the regular in, just like you can easily just put the regular Coke in. Sometimes they're out of the diet. Sometimes they're not paying attention, whatever. Sometimes they get it mixed up with somebody else's. Like, they all look the same, so just be careful out there.
The paranoia is real. It's so funny. Like, we're like scared. We're like afraid of sugar. It's like Jason Halloween.
That's what I have nightmares about, you know?
It's so funny.
That's what I have nightmares about.
What I'm like serious though too, and actually I just hate drinking sugar, but when Starbucks is making my drink, I like, and if I'm in there, I'll like look, the sugar-free one is the row, like the higher row, at least at most of them. And so I like watch which one he does, and I watch it, and I try to look as much as I can. It's so bad.
I just bring my own Stevia's flavorings, and I'm like, I'm not trusting it.
Yeah. So, and another tip for you guys too with that, I bring my own Stevia flavorings now too. I don't do that because the packets. So you guys know the packets of sugars that are at the Starbucks
sweeteners,
and things like that.
Not
the sweeteners,
sugars.
Yeah, sweeteners. They have anywhere between 1 and 3 grams of sugar in those packets.
You mean carbs?
Sugar, really. Carbs.
It's like maltodextrin,
yeah,
I guess,
so it's
technically.
A version
it's
of
not
sugar.
Gonna appear as
yeah,
sugar, but
I should say that. You're right. So it's gonna be dextrose, maltodextrin, there's like, I don't know, 60 or something names for sugar, which is like, but it's still basically sugar. So so those are not calorie free. And the reason is that stevia is so sweet that there would be barely any powder in it. So for some reason they have the manufacturers of these packets, you know, they want it to look like sugar. So instead of giving you like a tiny bit of stevia, which would be just a learning curve, they put actual powdered, like a powder filler, like maltodextrin. So it looks like, so it feels like you're doing like a regular sugar.
Yeah, I
Isn't
think too, it's like it's so little amount that it would get lost in the packet, or the packet would be super, super small. And it's like one of those marketing things where it looks like, why would I buy this brand whenever their packets are like the size of a dime, you know? Because they would literally have to be that small because it's like such a minuscule amount. So if you go on Amazon, you can get the pure form.
Yeah.
You just got to be careful when you're adding it in, because you start adding it in as you would like it's a packet, right? Yeah. And you're like, oh my God, that's way too much. If you get the pure like form of stevia powder, it is like, whoa. It's like you only need like the little smidgy sprinkle.
I had one of these little bags, and the bags are, they look like they're expensive, but they're really not because of how much is in there. Like a bag like that big, which is like, I don't know, for people listening, it's probably like 100, maybe 100 grams. I don't know. It's like $12 or something, but it lasts you like a year. It's you use so little of it. So that's a good tip on that. Now, in the UK, they have little
tablets.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was there with Phoebe and she's like, yeah, just grab a tablet. And I was like, what are they? And it's pure stevia. I'm like, why are they so far ahead of the curve on that?
Well, you can't put those on top of a salad.
They have some like, no, you can't. They have some, but it was for the coffee though. The coffee. They have some crazy things over there. I was with Phoebe and they even had homeless people that had like, they had homeless people that had like iPads that you could pay them with on Venmo and stuff. Like instead of giving a guy a dollar, like he's like, yeah, here. It was crazy. I was like, what's going on? Like it was like electronic
exchange.
There was a few of them and I'm like, I've never seen that before. And then like, it was with her and Phoebe was like, yeah, it's like pretty normal. I was like,
huh,
crazy, right? The digital world, even the homeless have a digital currency.
Who gives them that?
I don't know.
That's odd.
I mean, it's a good investment. If you're like, yeah, I don't know. It was weird. It was crazy. It was in the train stations. In the train stations they have there, the subways.
Very interesting. So, that one is false. Obviously, eating a diet with a lot of fish will not help. Eating a diet with a lot of fish will help thin skin is false.
Yeah.
False. Okay. Next one. So this one It's like very appropriate because we are, cheers.
Oh, we're drinking coffee, yeah.
Coffee or caffeine speeds up the metabolism. True, myth, or partly true.
So any central nervous system stimulant will have positive effect on metabolic output to some capacity. How much? It's not a game changer. It's not a huge amount. There's some research showing that that things like stimulants can increase metabolism, especially like caffeine-based stimulants, can increase like thermogenesis. So basically, like in a non-technical way, it increases your calorie burn by a little bit, yes. So how effective is it? There's a huge sliding scale. Like, how sensitive are you to caffeine? Like, so if you have someone who's never had any caffeine at all, you know, you give, you know, Mike Tyson never drank coffee ever in his life. You give him a coffee, he's going to have a way better effect from that coffee than I will, who drinks a coffee every day, mm-hmm. right? So, like, there's like a sliding scale on that. But, There does seem to be a positive effect. I will notice. So, and there's some things that you're going to get with like data because of the people as well, right? You get mm-hmm. a bunch of college kids who are drinking energy drinks all day long. You put them in a metabolic, you do put them in a fat burner study. Probably not much is going to happen because they're so desensitized to caffeine, right? You put someone, you know, Mike Tyson again in that same study, totally different outcome, right? I've worked with thousands of people over the years and I have people on fat burners. And it's basically the basic things like caffeine. We use one called ThermoForce, been using it for like 9 years or something. And I will notice a difference of how hard it is for someone to lean out when they're on it, when they're not. Mm-hmm. Especially if someone, this is where I really notice it is when someone is like going slow because they didn't want to do thermogenic. And then they're like, you know what, I'm just going to try it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden things start speeding up. Right. Like that's data I can't prove. Right? Mm-hmm. It's just something that I see. And with right. so many people, it's like, okay, it's happened enough times. I do think it's there's something to it, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's arguments for it and against it. But you know, anything that's a central nervous system stimulant will increase metabolism in some capacity. That's why, you know, in thinking in the, like, I like to think of things in the most extremes and sometimes in the kind of a more gross way of thinking about it. But like, look at people who, like in the 80s and 90s, were doing cocaine and stuff like crazy, right? Like, yeah, they were rail thin, right? And it's like, it's a central nervous system stimulant, right? Now, that's obviously the fat burners are way lower on the scale of that, right. But in terms of central nervous system stimulants, but yes, anything that stimulates the nervous system will have some effect on your total calorie output, yeah.
Yeah, and I would like to add to that as well, like, I kind of see it in a way, too, that it's not just like, oh, yeah, if I'm just, I'm going to drink coffee today, even, you know, or consume a fat burner, whatever, any type of stimulant. And I just like, okay, yeah, I'm going to have this in the morning and then just not do anything. Like, it's not necessarily going to give you a result you're going to see. But what a coffee can do might be something like, okay, you know what? This gives me the energy to get through my workout, like wake up, get things going, be more active in general. And I think sometimes too, like, I don't know about you, but sometimes caffeine or coffee, I should say more specifically, kind of cuts off my cravings a little bit. And maybe I'm not, you know, if I'm...
There are some appetite suppression qualities to caffeine too.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, I kind of look at it in that aspect as well. So not even just like, oh yeah, if I'm gonna burn a few more calories if I drink coffee or not, more so like it's going to give me the energy to have an awesome workout.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah. And that's why I am a fan of some pre-workouts too. I don't like people overloading on caffeine, of course, but
right.
And that's another thing too. Like when we talk about dieting in general, and we can jump into that one day too. But one thing I notice is that when someone's working out really, really hard, I've said this before, but when someone works out really hard all the time, their menu plan changes a lot less. Like when I see the intensity of them, and when someone who's like thinks they're working out hard and really isn't working out that hard, their menu plan changes a lot more often because we're having to like make up for the calories. And when someone's far in prep, if their energy is low and they're not having good workouts and all of a sudden the results are slowing down, sometimes you give them a refeed meal and it's not the refeed meal that like stimulates metabolism. It's that they have really good workouts because they have energy now.
Yeah.
Right. And then now they have really good workouts and then they make more progress again. So it's like there's other factors besides like calories, right? It's like, it's just, there's other factors besides that whole calorie in, calorie out thing. And so the intensity of the workout if you can get a better, more intense workout, then yeah, definitely. Because you're going to burn more calories from an intense workout too, not just the workout itself,
right?
But the recovery post-workout, mm-hmm. because you worked out harder, it's going to take more calories to recover. So exactly. Yeah, so there's a lot of ways of like getting that edge of, you know, indirectly increasing metabolism. So
right. And like, you know how you said, like, if you give somebody a refeed and they have more energy for a workout, sometimes it's funny because sometimes I won't necessarily crave like a food, but I crave like energy. And I know like food comes from energy. I don't know. It's kind of like I'm feeling sluggish. I'm craving like energy. Does yeah. that make sense? Like, so it's kind of like, I can see how that is definitely accurate for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. So next one, true myth or partly true. Wearing a waist trainer will reduce the size of your waist.
Oh, so he's the controversial one.
No, we're going to ruffle feathers. Oh no.
Okay. So let's go into the waist trainer. Cause I'm definitely, that's probably the thing one of the things I'm known for is definitely like bringing someone's in waist smaller. So here's the thing. And I know how stupid it sounds on paper. And I know how stupid it sounds. You know, it doesn't make it, it's total bro science. But here's okay, I'll go into the whole story. This is actually good because I think people need to hear like the story and the real reason we do it. So there's a lot of ways of attacking the waist. If you don't want to wear a waist trainer, don't wear a waist trainer. No one's saying you have to wear a waist trainer. I don't care if you're on my team. You don't have to wear a waist trainer. I don't care. So here's the thing. There's one of the ways of getting your waistline down is by doing vacuums, okay? That does help. But if something happens with doing vacuums all the time where your waistline gets a little bit tighter. The theory is that you're strengthening, you're tightening your TVA muscle, so your transverse abdominis, which is your rectus abdominis is the muscle that you look at that has the six-pack. That's the six-pack muscle. Under that wraps around parallel, it's a parallel to your spine. So it kind of wraps from your spine, goes around under the rectus abdominis. It kind of acts like a weight belt to your body's natural weight belt. That's the transverse abdominis. So if you're strengthening that, getting the endurance of that muscle and training it, you can... The theory is that it'll hold tighter and your waistline will be smaller. And I've seen it myself, and I do believe that. I do believe that it works a lot. So vacuums are great. Eating easy digesting food is great. That's the thing with these people. Like, you'll look at some of these, like, even big YouTubers that talk about bodybuilding, and they're always talking smack on a roid gut. They're like, oh, these bodybuilders have roid guts. They have roid guts and all this stuff. And I'm like, if you really think that, you're kind of an idiot. And that's what I hate about these guys who like light up bodybuilders, because they don't even understand the science of why. It's not steroids that do this. The steroids of these bodybuilders causes them to eat more food because they can digest more proteins and more calories because they've turned themselves into superhumans when they're on that type of hormone level. And so they can
they
eat
fly
more.
Around.
Yes, with all this muscle. And they can eat more food. So the problem is they can eat more food and synthesize more protein. And because of that, they're eating so much more food now because they're taking more than they have before. The drugs are better than they ever have been. And so because they're eating more food, their waistline's bigger and their gut is bigger. But if it was a roid gut and it was growing, like increasing cell size by, that's what they think. They're like, oh, well, you're taking growth hormones and it's increasing cells and you're multiplying cells. It's a thing called hyperplasia, which you increase cells. And they're like, the intestines are growing and all this. And I'm like, then why do they look normal after they retire? Their waistline goes right back down because of the food. That's it. It's not a roid gut. It's a food gut. And they're eating more food and they got a big gut. That's why, you know, that's why these powerlifters, same thing. They got a big old gut. A lot of that's not body fat. They're just eating so much damn food. They're force feeding. They have a big gut. So
that, I wonder if they've ever tried Senna, you know, just taking a big old poop.
They just eat too much
before
food.
Before they compete. Just a,
you know,
big
any,
poop.
The stomach stretches, you know, yeah. It stretches and comes back, you know. That's why you get those people who do those like those surgeries where they like the lap band.
They tie off the.
They
stomach.
Can grow the other half of the stomach just as big as it was before because they if they keep eating, so it grows again. You know, so like the roid gut isn't a roid gut; it's a food gut. So let's take that data and apply it to everyone else competing. Will your gut be bigger if you're having crappy off seasons and eating everything you see, and then trying to diet down and get your waistline as small as you can in 12 weeks? Of course, it will be. Than someone who just kept their waistline tight all year. Yeah, there's a price to pay for that. Now, will you have, let's say you're eating like foods that don't digest very well all the way through your prep because you're like an IFYMer and you're like, oh, it doesn't matter. Well, there's other things that matter besides body fat. Like, what about your waistline and eating easy digest foods that's going to keep your waistline nice and tight, right? It does matter. If you look exactly the same as someone, but then they have an inch smaller waist, they're going to win. That's just the way it goes. So, okay, so let's get that out of the way. So one, vacuums is a good way to get your stomach down. One is eating easy digesting foods that agree with your body. Two is having good digestion, like in terms of like, you know, taking a probiotic. Or three is someone taking good, you know, taking probiotics is huge. We've been using the same probiotics for years from the Leno. The digestive enzymes if you need them, taking psyllium husk if you need to increase your regularity, having good quality vegetables that don't cause like bloating and stuff, eating foods that you agree with. So that's another one. Okay, now let's get to the last step if you decide to go this step. One is wearing a weight belt. You wear it to disengage your...
I wear a weight belt. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like wearing a weight belt also is like wearing a waist trainer in the gym. It's funny because the guys who say... It's so funny because you see these like science guys and it's so funny because like they just have no practical application, right? Zero pro people on stages, zero high level stage stuff. They'll do like natural shows only where it's like four guys competing and I'm like, where's your data coming from? Like, look who you're competing against. So they're the same ones that say, oh, don't wear a waist trainer because it'll hurt you. And then you see them in the gym doing powerlifting with a weight belt on, tight as they can. I'm like, what do you think that is? Yeah. You think that that's not a waist trainer?
Listen, I hate that. I mean, whether you decide to wear one or not, I hate the, like, what is it, an alarmist type of, like, yeah. view of, like, oh, no, you put one on, you're gonna shift all, your intestine's going to come up your throat. Yeah. Like, listen, you can take anything and take it way too far, yeah. right? You can, just like caffeine, it's great for energy, but, hey, you can actually overdose on caffeine.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, if it hurts, take it off.
Yeah.
If you know, anything can be too much.
Yeah.
Anything. You can die of drinking too much water. Like, you gotta know when to stop. Like, if the weight belt or the waist trainer hurts, take it off.
Yeah.
Okay? Take it off. Okay? No one's like, it's not like you put it on and it's there for life. Okay? You lose it or take it off.
Yeah. So it's funny. So the guys who are saying don't wear it are the guys that are doing powerlifting and wearing like lever weight belts. And I'm like, that's way tighter than a waist trainer would ever be, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so now we're saying you can do it at certain times and it's not good for you, or you now you're saying it's just based on periods of time, which isn't studied. If wearing a waist trainer is bad for you, period, then you shouldn't even wear a weight belt if that's the argument, right? So just some common sense, guys, come on. So you're gonna need a little bit of a stronger argument to combat me with that. So that's just not, it's just common sense. Okay, so why do I think that waist trainers work? One, I think even saying that statement out loud is ridiculous, right? That waist trainers work. But this is what happened to me. About I don't know, maybe 8 years ago, 7 years ago, I was prepping a girl. I was actually prepping her for WBFF Worlds. She actually ended up finishing top 10 in the world in WBFF. And she was a very good student. She was like, hey, you're the boss. I'll listen. Whatever you say, I usually wear a waist trainer when I'm prepping. And I was like, well, that's stupid. Why are you going to do that? And she's like, because I always feel like it works for me. I'm like, it just works for you because you're dieting and it feels like it's working because you're losing body fat. And that's the only reason. She's like, okay, I won't wear one if you say not to, but what I'm going to ask you to do is to watch this video. And if after you watch this video, you agree that waist trainers don't work, then I won't wear one. I said, all right, that's fair. Very fair agreement. So she sends me the video and it's this girl called World's Smallest Waist. You can look it up. It's still on YouTube. World's Smallest Waist. Or you'll see a bunch of them. So I found this video, and I found it really interesting, and then I found this whole culture of, underground culture of people who, like, waist train to the extreme. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was a thing, but it's, like, a whole subculture.
Corsetting,
yeah. There was, like, this girl contacted me. She was a pro tire. They called it, like, a pro tire.
Tire?
Yeah, like she...
T-I-R-E?
Like she fits girls into corsets, like the right...
Oh.
Yeah, like she's
maybe like a fitter or something. A tire?
Maybe it was a fitter. I don't remember. But it was like... And I was like, wow, that's crazy. She's like, yeah, it's a whole world. So I was like, okay, I'll watch this, right? And so the girl... This is crazy, and I would never, ever say to anyone to do this. The girl had a 13-inch waist. 13 inches, which is like... Okay, so you know off the top of your head, common sense. Okay, was she born like that? No. Okay, so she got like that, yes. Okay, how did she get like that? Well, she was wearing waist trainers for years and years and years, probably to the point where now it's unhealthy. She still said she was pretty regular, everything was fine with her. But so you have to look at that and be like, okay, I can't argue the fact that it worked for her. I can't argue the fact that it's worked for hundreds of others who have 15-inch waist, 16-inch waist that weren't born like that. Okay, what if we just used it to get 1 inch, 2 inches down and create the ratios a little better? Before you could tell someone's waist training, I think if that girl showed up on stage, it'd look ridiculous. It wouldn't work. It would look terrible, right? But if we can get, let's say Ashley's stuck at 22 and we put her at, get her to 21, well, that's a pretty huge difference. Everyone's going to come up and be like, oh, her shoulders are really growing. Her lats are looking bigger. I'm like, no, her waistline's down an inch. That's all. It looks like everything's bigger and everything, the ratios are crazier, right? So we wear it to get 1 to 2 inches off. Phoebe did a video on waist training too, and she did it before she wore one and then after she wore one. And it wasn't like 16 weeks later. It was like 1 year she competed without one. And then the next year she competed wearing one and her waistline was 2 inches down. And it was the same level of conditioning.
So same like...
Same look.
Oh, wow.
But waistline 2 inches down. Mm-hmm. Explain that to me. Explain that it didn't work, mm-hmm. right? I have data and data and data. And I'm like, I know it sounds stupid. It shouldn't work. But some reason it does. And I think it's stupid, but it works. And so that's why I ended up switching. So I created my own. And I originally only created my own because the problem was everyone was using those squeams. And like...
Squeams.
Yeah. And they like... The problem is if you can get into a waist trainer that doesn't tighten, well, then it's not going to do anything because it was loose enough for you to get into it. So I was like, okay, we need to look at a way of putting it on and then tightening it. And so that's where I created mine. And then they started off like this long, and then I had to shorten them, and I had to get it right under the rib cage because I didn't want it to like push on people's ribs real hard. And so it was like, so they can get tighter in the midsection. And so, yeah, I put like, I don't know how many revisions I've done on it. I think like 4 or 5 now. And so that's why we have ours that are smaller in between the hip bone, the iliac crest, and the rib. And then, I've had some crazy stories with it. So it doesn't make sense. I'll tell you that. I know it doesn't make sense. I think it sounds stupid to say it out loud, but what I can say is it works and I've seen it happen so many times and so many people can verify. Is it good for you? Is it healthy for you? We don't know. You know, I haven't had any issues with anyone wearing it for years, so I don't know.
But at the same time, hurts, good. Take it off.
Yeah, but at the same time, I tell people don't go that crazy with it. Only wear it during like your show prep. Off season, you could wear it if you want. I don't think it's smart to wear it all the time. I don't know if there's any long-term ramifications for it. All I know is I've been now doing some form of it for a better part of a decade, and I haven't had any issues yet. There's always, but if someone's going crazy with it, I'm sure something could happen.
You can abuse anything, really. Yeah. So just to clarify, are you saying that the waist trainer then strengthens the transverse abdominis muscle? Because I'm not sure if, like, I know you mentioned the vacuums did, but the whole process of how or what is going on to make it.
I don't know how that would, I don't know how anything transpires in terms of, like, losing an inch or so. It would make, anytime you, like, secure a muscle, so think of a muscle, like, in a cast, it's always
atrophy.
Like, yeah, it atrophies. So is it atrophying any muscles? I don't know. It would seem unlikely because you're not wearing it for long enough to, like, you know, I don't know what's occurring. And it's a weird thing. And it's so funny because I'm so, like, science-based. And this is one of those things where I'm like, it works, and I don't know why. And everyone is constantly getting feedback on it of people telling me that, hey, I'm an inch smaller this time on my show, and I'm the same conditioning. Hey, I'm 2 inches smaller, and I'm the same conditioning. And I'm like, gosh, it's working. There's a whole culture of it, doing it for hundreds of years. These girls look crazy. It's obviously working. So it's like...
You know, I would think that it would, though, strengthen that muscle because you're kind of, like, forced to be in a super, like, upright, good posture position. And, you know, we don't really sit like this ever. We don't sit, like, super upright in our day-to-day. So, you know, we might not be able to hold that for very long in that perfect posture position. But having that kind of forces you to use those muscles and kind of maybe strengthens it. Or perhaps another thing it could be as well as the idea of, like, your stomach can't really expand that much. So if you're having, like, food, it's not going to, you know, expand out. Think about having a meal, you know, and your stomach kind of, mine distends a lot. I'm like, so if you have, like, a big meal, your, like, stomach distends. But even to a smaller point, like, you know, have anything. But maybe having that on doesn't allow the stomach to descend, so it kind of shrinks it, perhaps. I don't know. I'm just thinking.
I don't know. But those are good theories. Yeah, it's one of those things that, you're never really going to know the answer because the case study group is, you know, they're dieting down, they're doing show prep. There's like, it's hard to say, you know? Mm-hmm. But all I know is I didn't believe in them. There's a lot of like science guys who like don't even look, like try to like look at data. But then there's some guys who've like converted and they're like, yeah, they're saying the same thing I am. They're like, it doesn't make sense. And like, there's nothing that makes any sense about it, but it works. And I don't know why, but it does. There's a couple guys out there that are like at least open. I hate guys that aren't open to things, you know?
Right.
So I'm open to whatever, you know, like at least look at it, you know? So that one is one I looked at. And so, yeah, we've been having those. I made our own for, we've had our own for 5 years now, something like that.
Yeah. And I will say too, it's like also, it could be a great alternative to a lifting belt because some people find lifting belts to be kind of uncomfortable because it's just a strip of like leather going across your midsection. It can like really cause a lot of tension in just that one section. But having the trainer on can be like a more spread out, stable feeling. But obviously it depends on what you're training that day, right? You can't be training like lower back or like abs that day, obviously. So like, you know, on certain things, I think that it can be a great alternative to a lifting belt because it's more comfortable for a lot of people that don't want that really tight band just going, just like 3-inch band going across their midsection. So that, I don't know, just something to think about.
Yeah, and so the ones we use, they're at teamelitephysique.com.
Link in description.
Link in description. But yeah, we've been using them for quite a few years, and then I've had them modified like 5 times to make them like for a competitor. So yeah, I mean, I don't know, they work. Like there's just something about them. But if you don't want to do that, do the other things. Eat good foods, wear a weight belt.
Make good poops.
Yeah, make good poops, good digestion.
Good poops.
Train your transverse abdominis by doing a lot of vacuum training. And you'll get most of the effect, you know. It's the problem is like a lot of people want to take this sport and think of it as like just health and fitness. But it's not. It's extreme fitness. This is physique competition. It's not supposed to be like the healthiest route. It's any sport at the highest level is not the healthiest sport. Wrestlers are trying to make weight. Mm-hmm. Boxers are trying to make weight. You know, cyclists are pushing themselves so hard every day that their nervous system's fried and they're just trying to get through training. Like, it's just like every sport at the top level has its things, you know, this is one of them. So
yeah, I always hated that argument when people like trying to make it sound like it's unhealthier than any other sport, right? Because it's like every like high level sport, it's not supposed to be easy.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be like, I'm just going to go for a little workout, you know, like try being like a professional swimmer or something like 6 hours a day or whatever, like our workouts are like nothing compared to that. Yes. You know? Okay. Next. If you do too much cardio, you will lose muscle. True? Is this myth or is this partly true?
I would say it's situational, but also partly true. More leaning on the side of true.
So,
and it depends on the person too. So there's a lot of factors that go into this. This is another onion question, right?
Onion question. Layers. Oh, I've never heard that term.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's very clever.
You like that? I didn't come up with it. I wish I could take credit. But so here's the thing. Okay, if you take Ashley and you have her running endurance-based sports doing endurance-based things for long periods. So think about. Okay, so I would say look at the evidence of look at a marathon runner and look at a sprinter. Who has more muscle? Well, the sprinter, because they're doing more explosive, short burst things that require more white muscle fiber and just they're explosive and fast, right? Marathon runner, they have a lot less muscle because one, their body, it's not efficient for them to run for long periods of time and have a lot of muscle. You know, you get a bodybuilder and you try to get him to run with a marathoner, he's just not going to last very long. He's not built for that. So the difference of muscle fiber is one, is for more of its oxidative abilities. It can take in more oxygen, right? So that's like the red muscle fiber. It can take in oxygen. It can go for a long period of time. It's designed to like move, right? Now think about it. If a muscle is designed to move for long distances, should it be big and heavy? No, it should be light and little because it's designed to move for long periods. So now if a muscle is designed to be strong and only for very short periods of time, should that muscle be strong and big and heavy? Yeah. Because it doesn't matter how big it is because you're going for strength and speed and time is kind of irrelevant. So, all right, so you look the way you train. Okay, so do you want to look like a marathon runner? Okay, if you do, then train like a marathon runner. If you want to look like a sprinter, then don't train like a marathon runner. That's the data there, right? So if you do anything endurance-based, then you will build endurance-based muscle fibers, right? More endurance-based muscle fibers. And you will become more efficient. So if you're doing long distance cardio, let's say you're doing 2 hours, 3 hours of cardio a day, well, yes. Remember, now you've turned into a marathon runner, even though you're not a marathon runner, your body thinks you're turning into like this endurance athlete. Well, it's gonna say, hey, it doesn't make sense for me to have all this muscle because it's hard to carry it around for this long of a period and it's not very good at recruiting oxygen. Let me build some more red muscle fiber, which is smaller in size. Let me get rid of this big white muscle fiber because it's it's taking too much energy for me to carry it all day long. So I'm going to build more of endurance base. So yes, take someone like Ashley. She's going to lose some muscle. Now, what's a dictating factor? One is going to be her calories. If she's in a, you know, if she's in a very low calories and very, you know, protein isn't there, yeah, she's going to lose a lot more than if she was like high protein. But she'll still lose some if she's high protein. Now, if you take someone, and this is where the data gets all screwed up. If you change someone's chemistry and you have like bodybuilders, and this is where everything gets messed up. And this is why a lot of bodybuilders aren't good bikini coaches, because bodybuilders take a bodybuilding method and they try to apply it to a bikini athlete. And it's not the same thing. It's totally different. So you get a bodybuilder and they're like, oh, do 2 hours of cardio, do it fasted, do this and that. And just like, just sit on the treadmill for whatever. Some of these girls are doing 3 hours. It's crazy.
Yikes.
I've seen it. I've seen 4 hours is my greatest I've seen for a junior nationals prep. This girl's like, I'm doing 4 hours right now. I just have to do all my work on the
oh my God.
On the treadmill, on a laptop. I'm like, that's crazy. But here's what happens. Why are they able to do it and other people are not? Well, you got to remember, when you start taking PEDs, you change everything. So these people, they'll take a real strong fat burner, like a Clan or something like that. They'll take growth hormone in the morning that frees up fatty, that frees up the fat easier. They'll take this thing called FRAG, which frees up fat easier. And then they will do cardio for 2 hours while all this fat's freed up, while they're taking like a Clan and a fat burner and probably a thyroid pill. And then they're taking a crazy high protein diet, and then they're taking steroids, so their muscle's not gonna, it's really hard to lose muscle in that scenario. And then they're eating, you know, whatever, amino acids during it too, so it makes it even harder for them to lose muscle. So yeah, they created a really good environment to be anti-catabolic. So anti-catabolic in terms of lean mass, right? And then a really strong effect of losing body fat as a source of energy. So catabolic in that regard, I guess. But so then you look at this person, you're like, no, he's doing fasted cardio. That bodybuilder does fasted cardio all the time. I should be able to do that for long distances too. And then the girl starts running off her glutes or walking off her legs, right? Well, she's not taking what that bodybuilder's taking. Why is the same thing being applied to her, right? It doesn't make sense. So there are scenarios that are not like in the mainstream that people don't understand, and they just look at the bodybuilder who's not telling you everything, and they try to apply it to the bikini competitor. And the bodybuilders will even tell the bikini competitor to do that because it works for them, right? And that's what they know. And then they can never hit their peak. Their glutes get smaller, their legs get smaller, they're always looking kind of stringy. They try to fill them out at the end and it doesn't work. You know, it's like, well, of course they're not filled out because they're doing endurance-based cardio and their body's just now is smaller now because they're doing so much cardio. It's not that they're flat, it's that they have less muscle, and they think it's like, oh, they just need to fill out a little bit more. And then like a month later, that girl looks full and looks good again. Well, she stopped doing 2 hours of cardio. That's why she looks fuller again, because she gained some muscle back. It's not that she got filled out and she was flat originally. She didn't have the same muscle she used to have. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, it's definitely one of the things that like, I wish people would like, at least like maybe listen to that and the common sense of that, because it sucks to see girls build muscle in the off season, do really good, and then just lose it in the in season every year. And then they're always chasing that last physique and chasing that last physique and not improving, just chasing where they were before. So yeah, I'm pretty big against that stuff. So I try to never have anyone do more than 45 minutes of cardio. That's kind of like my max. For like short periods of time, 2 weeks or so, you know, and you're just trying to really like grind out, whatever, I'm not opposed to it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, unless the scenario is the bodybuilder one, which I don't, and that's why I don't really work with bodybuilders anymore, is because it got so crazy on that side of things. You know, I don't think that there makes a lot of sense to do that for the regular bikini girl. Unless it's like, now here's another scenario. You look at like someone like Frida, right? When she was competing, it made sense for her to do that because she had too much muscle. So yeah, to get her to be a bikini frame, we had to not work out. We had to do a lot of cardio and we had to be in a caloric deficit because she had to get smaller into a show. We purposely lost muscle, right? You'd have to get smaller. And now you see her, she's not doing that anymore. And all of a sudden everyone's like, dang, she blew up. No. And I get so many people like, they're like, what is she taking, man? What is she taking? And I'm like, dude, she's eating food and she's lifting weights. I'm like, that's what she's taking calories, dude. She was doing whatever she had to do to maintain that small frame, mm-hmm. wasn't working out, wasn't eating as much food to keep that small frame. And all of a sudden she ate, lifted like a boss, which she didn't do for years.
Right.
Because she was avoiding it. And then just boom, right? Like
right.
4 months, she's a different person, right? It's like, it's crazy. So that right there shows you, hey, yeah, you can if you do too much cardio and you're not, you're like, you can affect your total, you know, how much muscle you have. Yeah, I can't imagine what it would take to get her back there now. It would be like a year of cardio. Like a year of cardio and like 500 calories.
Yikes, that doesn't sound very fun.
So funny. But that just kind of shows, that's good evidence too to show you, you know, mm-hmm. like that's just from doing the exact opposite of endurance-based training. You know, mm-hmm. the exact opposite of it. Yeah. So
I think we have time for one more little statement here. And it's quite similar to the last one. And it is, if you lose weight too quickly, you will lose muscle. What do you think about that, Adam?
So we're going to talk about like, and again, that scenario comes up. It is true. But the scenario comes up too of like the bodybuilder again.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I always like to throw out everything. I never hold anything back because I think we're kind of like one of the only people that like talk about things that actually happen, you know? In bikini world, even the top bikini girls, a lot of them are natural, which is people are like, no way. I'm like, well, they're big enough where they don't need to take anything, right?
They all think we're huge because our stage photos, we look huge. But in person, I promise I'm not huge.
Yeah, I'm like, Ashley's 120 pounds. How many steroids do you think it takes to maintain a 120-pound body?
I weighed more in my track days.
You know what I mean? And people are like, oh, they're taking this and that. I'm like, no, you're just using excuses because you're not there yet. And they've put in a decade, and that's why they look like that. A lot of those girls don't take much if they take anything because they can't. They're a little too muscular. So, again, take that into account with this question, right? So if you are a bodybuilder and you're on a bunch of stuff, you can lose a ton of weight and you probably won't lose hardly any muscle. You might even gain muscle in it. Look at Kevin Lavroni when he would grow into a show. He would grow into a show. He wouldn't work out for 6 months. He'd prep for the Olympia and all these shows like the last 6 months of the year or whatever, the 6 months before the Olympia. He would tour. He was in a band. He would tour, not work out. He'd still always be big genetically. Get a little soft, get a little chubby, really. Not like crazy, but a little chubby. And then he'd start prepping for like 6 months. Within 12 weeks, he'd be like way bigger and way leaner at the same time. Right? He can grow into a show. He's not losing any muscle when he's getting ready for a show. He's gaining muscle into a show, which defies science. There's like two guys who's done that, right? So yeah, you have that. And then you have your natural girl who's just trying to lean out for a show. She's 130 pounds, trying to get to 115, let's say. That girl loses 2 pounds a week. Well, 1.3 pounds of someone who weighs 130 pounds is 1% of their weight. So her losing 2 pounds is now pushing past 1% of her weight. She's at like 1.6, 1.7 pounds percent of her weight. Mm-hmm. She's pushing weight loss to the point where she's going to start tapping into more lean mass. So the safe rule of thumb is like when you lose lean mass, like when you're dieting for a show, about 20% of your total loss is going to come from lean mass. That's a safe bet. Now remember, lean mass doesn't mean skeletal muscle. Lean mass means anything that's lean. Anything that's not fat is considered lean mass. So skeletal muscle might be in that a little bit, but mostly, you know, the water from losing it, from losing body fat, you're having more water with the body fat too. So if you lose body fat, you lose some water, that's lean mass. So that's the rule of thumb. If you're going way past that, you're losing too much, then yeah, you're going to sacrifice some lean mass for it. The more you lose, the more you'll sacrifice because the larger the deficit was. And so the body will, you know, again, the body's just trying to survive. So it makes a lot of sense to get rid of muscle because muscle is a metabolic tissue. So any metabolic tissue, it makes sense to reduce it if you're having low calories because your body's like, I'm just trying to preserve myself. So yeah, the easiest one, your body can't reduce its liver size, right? Which is a metabolic tissue. So the easiest one to get rid of is going to be your skeletal muscle and then, you know, brown adipose tissue, right? So because that actually has metabolic effect too. So so there you go.
So there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
That was kind of fun.
Yeah, so much fun. I learned so much. Yeah. Yay.
So I like those questions sometimes because it makes it like there's stuff that I know that I forgot I know because I used to study so much and then like something will jog it and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot all about that. That's cool. Yeah. But I mean, and it's funny because like after these, I'll usually like look up if I was right and I'm like, okay, I was mostly right.
Right.
I was like, because it's so long. There's so much stuff out there. It's just, you could just get lost for years and years on it. So, but so it's actually, I like doing these because it makes you think, it keeps you fresh, you know?
Keeps you fresh.
Keeps you fresh. Got to be
keeps
always.
Keeps you on your toes.
Yeah. So I guess with that, is that it?
I think that's it, Coach Adam B.
Okay, guys. Well, thank you so much for watching. I think, are you low in energy because you're getting ready for your show?
I mean, I think it's just lack of sleep.
Ashley struggles with sleep. If you guys have any like sleep solutions that we haven't tried, let us know.
You
probably tried everything, though.
But, I mean, whatever. I'll sleep when I'm dead. Yeah. Is that what they say? I'll sleep when I'm dead. Whatever.
Yeah.
Well, don't worry about me. I'll sleep when I'm dead.
You'll be dead when you're dead, but you're okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
You'll be sleepy. You'll be dead.
I won't know.
Okay. That's funny. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.